Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 11, Mystery Spot, where the laws of physics have no meaning. Is there anybody who doesn't like this episode? I'm sorry. This is a fandom favorite. I think most of the cast and crew loves this episode. It's just fantastic. Written by Jeremy Carver and directed by Kim Manners, who you really can't go wrong with. This is Jeremy Carver's third episode, and he manages to just hit it out of the park. I love this episode so much. Partially because even in later seasons, the themes of this episode basically hold true right to the end of the series. And I'll explain what I mean by that as we go on, but it's a mirror for Chuck's entire writing process, tidily encapsulated in a single episode. Of course, we don't know it's Gabriel. At the time this episode aired, that didn't come out for two more seasons. But now that we know that, that changes how we have to look at this episode in retrospect, because that ties it into the huge meta plot of the entire series. Chuck, his process, all of creation, how he interacts with creation. Gabriel is doing it on a smaller scale in this episode, and that always seems to be Gabriel's role. And I love that he's that aspect of Chuck. Time loops, Groundhog Day. It's fun until it's just not fun anymore. So are lessons in the inevitability of destiny and the futility of fighting back, which is what Gabriel is purportedly trying to teach Sam in this episode, and Sam just totally fails to learn, thank goodness. Though it does drive his plot along further too, his character arc, into Ruby's arms, basically. We also see the extreme measures that Sam can be driven to undertake, and how ruthless he can be, and how just horrifying it is. The things he's willing to do in order to save Dean. He gets in this headspace in this episode that I don't know that we've seen it before in canon, and it's terrifying. And we will see it again from Sam. Gabriel's not wrong when he calls him Travis Bickle in a skirt. I mean, if you've not seen Taxi Driver, you should probably see Taxi Driver, but this guy is single-mindedly, violently driven. And in the name of something he believes is truly good, he's convinced he's in the right here. And what his actions, however horrific, are valid. Like, it's horrible. But that's kind of Sam in this episode. He's convinced that what he's doing is right. And it's terrifying. And we will see him go on this little journey for real at the beginning of season 4 and what he does after Dean is taken to hell. It's just a little preview glimpse of it here. And I think part of Gabriel's mission in this episode was to expose that side of Sam to himself. And he doesn't take that lesson to heart like he should have. But we'll see that theme again of Dean trying to save Sam and Sam trying to save Dean. And that goes on through the entire series, of course. And in this episode, in this microcosm of the larger narrative, Sam wins. He bargains his way out. And I mean, the inevitability of Dean's death is still hanging over him, but it's not going to happen on this Tuesday or that Wednesday. It's going to happen in its due time. He won, technically. He got what he wanted from the quote-unquote God power that was making this reality happen for him in this particular way. He saved Dean from that. And they both walk away, and they live, and they can make free choices again about what they're going to do with themselves after that. The series finale wasn't so gracious with them. But I'm going to do my best not to dwell on this episode versus the series finale, because otherwise we will be going down horrible rabbit holes all day. I feel like I should pull to the side of the road here for a moment and give a brief refresher on how I see the Archangel Gabriel and what his position is in the narrative. Even though we don't know that this is Gabriel yet, we know it's Gabriel. And so that's how I'm looking at this episode. I've personally always looked at the four archangels as facets of Chuck's personality, for lack of a better word. And he's not a person. He doesn't get a personality. But of who Chuck is at his core. And each of the four archangels shares different characteristics with Chuck, or expresses different aspects of Chuck's personality that we see different faces of throughout canon. They're largely considered his first four creations at the beginning of creation. I'm not going to debate about like when the Leviathans came into being, because supposedly they came before angels, but they got locked up. But did the angels help them lock them up? Because the archangels supposedly helped lock up Amara, which supposedly happened before the Leviathan. But see, we're not going to get into that mess. We'll work that out in another episode, probably, when the Leviathans come into play. But for right now, we're going on what canon has told us, that the archangels were the first four creations of Chuck once the universe was established, before he locked away Amara. So going on that, I'm going to go with A, he probably wasn't really that practiced at creating things yet and hadn't had a chance to like really see what the results of his creations would be and how that they would interact with the rest of creation. And I think he got better at it as he went on. Like, they were very basic model creations. And so they don't really deviate that much from Chuck. They're the most inflexible beings in creation. They have their mission. Like, look at Michael, who was absolutely convinced that he had a destiny and was unwilling to do anything to veer off that destiny, because that was the right thing to do, because God said so, and God is right about every, you know, he was totally inflexible. It was like the culmination of the apocalypse arc at the end of season 5 was him still clinging to that. And it took 10 years of being locked in the cage in hell, trapped with a human soul inside of him, talking to him and convincing him that maybe that's not the only thing you have to be, for him to even waver on that. And only once he lost that human soul and the love that that human soul showed him, did he fall right back into, oh, okay, yeah, I'm going to side with my father again, because everything else is pointless. So intrinsically and inherently inside of Michael, he lacked that spark of free will or love, for lack of a better word. But love really is the best word. The first four archangels really did. But they each had their own sort of expression of Chuck that was different. Michael is loyal. Lucifer refuses to obey. Raphael is resigned in a middle child sort of way. And Gabriel runs away. Sort of like Chuck Shirley, the dude in the bathrobe that we first meet and will later learn was God. I know that a lot of people theorize, was he really God at that point? Or was he really just a prophet that God ended up possessing or replacing? Or no, I think it was always Chuck. He was playing his role. He thought that was a fun role to play. I think he enjoyed writing these stories down and pretending to be just some guy so he could be part of the action without having any responsibility to it. And I like to see him that way because I find it in character with everything that happened for the rest of the series. Really makes him look like a dick, you know? So Gabriel basically pulled a Chuck. He went to Earth, played a role, meddled with people's lives, and dismissed his own responsibility for all those situations that he created. It wasn't his fault that these people deserved to be treated like this. They should have made better choices, and then they would have, you know, he pushed all responsibility for any of those actions onto the people who he affected, which is exactly what Chuck does. Blaming Sam and Dean, like, right up until the end, like, at the end of season 14, and he's telling them, oh, you guys wanted to fight Leviathans, so I made Leviathans. You know, you wanted to fight the British Men of Letters, kind of boring, but, you know, that's what you wanted, so that's what you got. And it's like, dude, they never wanted any of that. They wanted to not have to do any of that. You are the one who wanted to see them do that. But he blamed the characters as if he wrote those stories because the characters wanted that, or made those choices. And he was just wrong about that, just like Gabriel is about the choices that he forces Sam to have to make. And all of these themes get brought back up again in 5-8 Changing Channels, which is the episode where it's revealed who Gabriel really is. But we'll get there eventually. There's enough in this episode for now. Let's stick to one at a time. But I just wanted to bring that up because the themes around Gabriel are always the same. I mean, even after he comes back in season 13, they're still along the same thread. He gets character growth, though. Chuck kind of gets character regression. He just gets worse as this series goes on. Because he just gets more and more frustrated with his whole narrative of creation. He doesn't grow and learn from it. He just keeps trying to hit the same target over and over and over again. And it just provides diminishing returns to him in terms of entertainment. And he's just sick of it. But he doesn't want to hear another story. He doesn't want to sit back and just watch the story play out. He wants to meddle with it. He wants it to look the way he wants it. And he wants all the characters to do exactly what he said. Because he really just doesn't understand free will. At least Gabriel begins to understand it. Which brings us to the inevitability of destiny. Which is sort of the lesson that Gabriel was attempting to teach Sam in this little montage of death. Getting Sam used to the idea that Dean was dying and that there was nothing he could do to stop it, possibly, but also attempting to demonstrate how little control and power Sam had to change the universe in general, which is sort of the frustrating lesson that Chuck was trying to impart through the entire story of Supernatural. These characters kept foiling his plans and tearing up the pages and writing their own destiny and making their own choices and trying to break the narrative. And Chuck, he didn't want that. He wanted them to comply with his story. The characters repeatedly pointed out how stupid and terrible the story Chuck wanted to stick them in really was. But unlike Chuck, at least Gabriel paid attention to this and eventually saw their point. I have to wonder if Gabriel provoking Sam in this episode and showing him a glimpse of this darkness that he's going to have to face after Dean didn't help kind of nudge him in the direction, or at least towards the tipping point where he was willing to work with Ruby once Dean was gone. Obviously, he didn't immediately trust Ruby when she first came back to him after Dean's death, which we won't learn till like the middle of season 4, but whatever. But he does eventually come to trust her. And she has 4 months before Dean comes back to establish that connection with Sam. She lets him struggle a little bit at first, probably, and start heading down that Travis Bickle road again before she starts pulling him back and saying, hey, look, there's still good we can do. And that's the lure that gets him. But also knowing that there's nothing he can do to get Dean back. This episode kind of foreshadows that. And I know I said I wasn't going to talk about season 15 as much in this episode, but I kind of have to because this whole episode is the overarching theme of season 15 in a nutshell, and it pains me. But the way that Dean broke when he found out about Chuck and his influence and his meddling and how much he had meddled in their lives and the way it shattered Dean, but Sam was able to sort of push through. And I think at least some of that is credit to the way that Gabriel messes with him in this episode. Because what's even real about his choices? He had this lesson drilled into him over 100+ days. Every day he would make different choices. Every day would end the same. Different. I mean, Dean died in 100 different ways at least. And nothing he did, no changes he made, even knowing what was going to happen over and over again, always had the same ending, and he was powerless to change it until he wasn't. But it wasn't him that made the change. It was Gabriel deliberately throwing him a bone by pouring strawberry syrup on his pancakes instead of maple. And Sam was alert enough to notice and realize, aha, I'm the only thing that changes in this every day. This is a clue. This is a lead to follow. And it's sort of like finding the loose thread in the rug in heaven so you can break out of your personal heaven that Bobby uses. That was his loose thread so he could break out of that. But he still didn't quite break out because Gabriel just trapped him in a bigger loop of the months that he had to endure believing that Dean was dead, single-mindedly focused on finding the trickster again so he could force him to bring Dean back. Months had passed, long past the original date of Dean's scheduled death. Sam experienced months of this. Regardless of whether it happened entirely in Sam's mind or if it was a true time loop where they kept resetting the day and resetting the day, it's irrelevant because it's still Sam's lived experience, whether it happened in reality or just in his mind. So he's already had that experience of having his entire sense of self shattered, that none of his choices matter, therefore only his choices matter. Because it's not what, you know, the results are, it's what it says about him. And he's had years to absorb this lesson, having experienced it way back here in season 3. So when it comes to the end and they find out how much Chuck has meddled with them their whole lives, it's not that much of a shock to Sam. He's like, yeah, that's how it goes. And it just rolls off his back. But Dean, it shatters. Dean is in this episode, but he's facing each new day as if fresh, and he has no memory of it the next day. It's almost like he's just deliberately trying to be as upbeat as possible, not even knowing that he's watching Sam slowly deteriorate over the 100 days of his repeated deaths. Even once Sam tells him about that, it's not really real to him. Because it can't be. It's not his lived experience. His lived experience was yesterday was Monday, today's Tuesday, tomorrow's Wednesday. He's also coming off his realization at the end of the last episode that, oh my God, I actually do want to live. I feel like I deserve to live. He's got a fresh boost of self-confidence or self-worth that he's carrying into this episode. He's like happier than he's been in a long time through these repeated cycles that are just grinding Sam down. So poor Dean is having a great time, he thinks, every day, until he stops getting breakfast. Anyway, right through the end of the series, the one thing that Dean has always clung to is his sense of self, his sense of free will, his belief in his own identity, that he is his own consciousness and that he hadn't been screwed with by outside forces, except for, like, you know, when he's been under a djinn dream or cursed or otherwise interfered with directly in a way he can recognize and say, ha, that was not me, you know, that was XYZ thing. But to find out that Chuck had been manipulating him his whole life, yeah, that kind of sucked. But Sam, again, is getting that experience here in a smaller, sort of more contained format. So it doesn't shatter his identity and sense of self the way it does to Dean at the end of season 14. Because the big story of Supernatural, all of it taken together, is that there was always a bigger picture to the meddling, right up to the final rendition in 1519, where, you know, we're not going to talk about 1520 because I'll start screaming for an hour and nobody wants to hear that. But right up until they truly believe they defeat Chuck, their lives were always being messed with by outside forces. Though I think this might actually be one of the most frustrating things for me about Sam's entire character arc, like other lessons that I've lamented over his failure to learn, specifically those about who Dean is as a person, his repeated willingness to just believe something is true and fail to fully engage with reality. It's something that just bugs me. I have a tag for Sam versus reality with like 80 posts in it. And I almost fell down that rabbit hole today while I was preparing for this episode, but I did not wade in. But he convinces himself of what he wants reality to be, even if it's not. And it just breaks his heart often once he realizes I was wrong. I mean, think about, like, at the beginning of season 11, when he believes He truly believes it is God sending him messages and God telling him what he needs to do in order to save the universe from Amara. And he fully believes it, even though Dean is like questioning him and poking at the logic of it. And Sam is like, I don't know. I just believe it is. It's got to be. Why else would I be getting these dreams? He could not be swayed from his belief until he ended up in the cage with Lucifer, and Cass ended up possessed by Lucifer, and Lucifer ended up free and walking the earth again because Sam could not let go of that belief that he was doing the right thing and that he was 100% correct. He went in there without even waiting for Dean. He could have waited for Dean. No, he did not. He was convinced he was right. And he gets on these kicks like this, where he's absolutely convinced he is right to the exclusion of any other even idea of what might be right. He will hide the truth. He will push Dean away and be convinced he's right. Like with the Book of the Damned, he totally believed he was in the right. I mean, it's a little bit of the Travis Bickle and him coming out again, but he hid all of that from Dean, even though Dean told him, no, this is an evil thing. I can feel it. It's a bad, bad thing. Do not use this. Do not do this. It's bad. And that was not enough. Sam was convinced that he was the only one who could see the truth and the rationality behind his actions. And then it ended up freeing Amara. So, like, this is a major, I mean, obviously it progresses the plot a lot because, you know, you got to have people screwing shit up to have a plot to fix, you know? But unfortunately, it tends to be Sam a lot. And I think that's why I have trouble relating to him as a character, because he is just so... I'm freaking Taurus, and my kid is always telling me, oh my God, you're such a Taurus. You're the most stubborn person, and you will just... Like, I think Sam is illogically stubborn, okay? Like, he frustrates me, which is saying something. That's like super duper saying something. Anyway. Dean wants to engage with reality because they have something that they can concretely do. They can chase after Bella and try and get the cult back. That's something that they should do. Even though it seems futile and, you know, they've hit dead ends trying to find her, they need that gun. But Sam is just fascinated by this mystery spot, so they detour all the way to Southern Florida, which is so far out of the way of everywhere else in the entire series. We never see them go back to Florida, let alone the very southern part of Florida. And Broward County is like, well, it's the third county up from the bottom of Florida, but it's down there. I grew up in Miami. I know exactly where they are. It's way down there. Somebody has disappeared there and he wants to make sure nobody else will. And he uses that to rope Dean into going down. He's fascinated by the mystery spot disappearance in a sort of pseudo-scientific way. He's found a shiny and chases it off through the underbrush and then gets trapped there in a repeating loop while Dean retains exactly nothing from each consecutive Tuesday and is reset to the beginning again every time. So poor Sam has to start each new day going through the same argument with Dean, defending his own experience to Dean, and attempting to figure out what's causing this to happen, all the while slowly losing his mind, until the real trick begins. Wednesday. And Wednesday is so much worse than Tuesday. We unfortunately don't have any script pages for this episode. I kind of wish we did. It would be a fun one to read. We don't have any bonus material from the Blu-ray or anything. What we do have is the information that this was the final episode to have filmed before the writer's strike, because it was filmed after Juice and Bello, the next episode to air. This episode did not air until Valentine's Day of the following year, which was 2 days after the strike resolved. So they had one episode more to air when the strike was fully resolved and they were informed what they would have left to the season. So after next week, every episode we watch from then on is with the knowledge that the season has been restructured and that plans have had to change. If Supernatural never came back, either this episode or Juice and Bello would have been aired as the series finale, though. So can you imagine ending the series on this note? I mean, it's bad enough to end it on Juice and Bella, which is kind of horrifying, but could you imagine this being the end of Supernatural and its legacy in the universe? Nobody, I mean, would we even still be talking about it at all? Of course not. But it would be some novelty show from almost 20 years ago that nobody even talked about anymore. So now that I've sort of gotten a loose baseline for the meta, and my cats are going absolutely bonkers over something that makes crinkling noises, I'm going to move on to the episode. Hopefully, most of what I wanted to talk about I've already covered, so I'm going to try not to narrate as much of this episode as I have been doing. But it's really hard, especially in such a cool episode, so apologies if I fail to restrain myself, but I'm trying to make these more reasonably lengthed. It was the heat of the moment. The then segment is a little bit unusual. It lets you know right from the outset that this episode is going to be different than what we've seen all season. It starts off with a weird chord. And yeah, Dean says, we're going to kill some evil sons of bitches and raise a little hell. Which we haven't seen that iteration of it in a while. It's always been about John and his legacy. And, you know, this doesn't open on their dad's funeral. It opens with the then card. There's usually like a little bumper of dad's funeral before that, but no, not in this episode. And then the whole thing just sort of descends into chaos. There's a quick cut montage of them swinging things at various ghosts and flaming out various monsters and spirits. One of them happens to be the trickster when Dean stabs him with the stake at the end of Tall Tales. Also, the djinn that Dean finally is able to kill at the end of What Is and What Should Never Be. So they're associating sort of what the trickster does with what a djinn does in this opening montage. We go back to Dean's original deal with the demon for Sam's life. Sam waking up, Bobby finding out that Dean only has 1 year to live now. And then Dean being confronted by his demonized self at the end of the last episode, saying, you're going to die, and this is what you're going to become. And Dean looking horrified at this. And then Dean in the car telling Sam, I don't want to go to hell. And Sam saying, we'll find a way to save you. Then it cuts back to the cult and John telling them about the cult from season one. They say this gun can kill anything, and they show it killing a demon and a vampire. And then we're reminded of Bella Talbot. We're reminded that Bella stole the cult in the last episode. And then we're reminded of Ruby talking to Dean at the end of the previous episode before the last one, saying she needs Dean's help with Sam. Because once Dean's gone, Sam's going to be having to carry on this entire mission on his own. And the cuts they used were of Sam fighting uniformed people and Sam holding a gun to the back of Gordon Walker's head. So Sam is clearly in for some darker days, as this montage has implied. Then we cut to now. Everything about this episode is just perfectly crafted. From the moment that Sam wakes up to heat of the moment, Dean's already awake. Rise and shine, Sammy. Dean tells him, come on, you know you love this song. And Sam's like, yeah, and if I ever have to hear it again, I'm going to kill myself. Well, Sam, get ready, because you're about to hear it for about 100 days in a row. And I want to point out something now, because I want everybody to sort of be paying attention to it throughout at least the first half of the episode, that every iteration of Sam's Tuesday is just a little darker, a little grainier visually. The lighting is a little dimmer. The quality of the film is a little bit grainier. That continues each time we see him wake up. The color is just being drained out of Sam's world. And Dean continues to act exactly the same every single day because it's still the same new day to him every day. It's not that same day, you know, again. It's fresh to Dean, to Sam. Since we're watching from Sam's point of view in this episode, it gets dimmer and dimmer. And kudos to Serge for shooting it that way. Dean does what seems to be an eternal gargle, and Sam is just like, what is wrong with you? And the music is lighter and funnier than we've heard in a while. So you're lulled into this experience of thinking, oh, this is going to be a fun episode. You know, they need a break. or they need something a little less drastic in consequences. But oh gosh, this episode is not that. I mean, it feels like it for a while, but then you feel bad for having enjoyed it so much. We meet the cast of characters who we will see throughout the episode carrying on their same days, just the same way Dean is, as Sam watches them over and over again and tries to interfere with the goings-on of each day's events. The guy who doesn't have enough money to buy a cup of coffee, the other guy who's paid his tab, the cashier, the waitress, Dean ordering the Tuesday breakfast special. Hey, pig in a poke. He doesn't even know what that is, and Sam points that out to him. Like, you don't even know what that is. Why are you so excited about a pig in the poke? And we see what it is once it arrives. It's a breakfast special, but Dean's all excited about it here. And a pig in a poke is a phrase for something that in old-timey markets, people would order a suckling pig, and they'd put it in a bag called a poke to take home, and if they were deceived, they'd get home and find out it wasn't a pig in the bag. It would be something less valuable. It was often a way to cheat people out of something. They think they're getting one thing, they get all the way home, and they find out they've been cheated. So that's the origin of the phrase, a pig in a poke. It implies that the contents of this are not what they were represented to have been. Just like this whole case. They're being cheated. And yet, every day, Dean will just as happily continue ordering his pig in a poke. Dean makes his argument for going off and finding Bella because the cult's more important than this small potatoes case where one guy has supposedly gone missing at a mystery spot and they don't really have any explanation for it. He's antsy about wanting to continue hunting for what is actually important and, you know, their time is running out. But Sam is insistent that they stay. They finish their breakfast, and then we meet a few more of our characters, namely the dog, when he'll get his chance to kill Dean as well. Geez, no wonder Dean really hates dogs. But Dean argues with Sam that mystery spots are just stupid things where there's, like, furniture nailed to the ceiling. There's no actual mystical supernatural stuff in them usually. They're just tourist traps. And Sam argues that, no, it could be a place where portals open to another world or something. While Sam is filling Dean in on, quote, the lore of the Broward County mystery spot, we bump into another character who happens to be the daughter of the missing man, but none of them find that out for days because Sam's too busy trying to figure out all the rest of the mysteries, and he just never bothered to ask her who she is when she's bumped into Dean every single Tuesday. We meet our movers, who will eventually crush Dean with a desk. When they break into the mystery spot late that night to look around and try and figure out if there's anything mysterious about it, Dean is pretty much fed up with it. It's exactly what he was expecting to find, just kitsch and a tourist trap. And Sam begins to admit, yeah, he has no idea what he's looking for, and clearly there's nothing wrong with the place. Little did they know, they were being watched by the owner, who had a paranoid streak and a twitchy trigger finger, and thought they were robbing him, and accidentally shot Dean in the chest. He was immediately contrite about it. Sam ordered him to go off and call 911, and then Dean just dies in his arms. And then we get the title card. And right after the title card, Sam wakes up again. And it's Tuesday again. Dean's singing along to Asia, telling him to rise and shine. All of it's exactly the same. And he is confused this go around. He hasn't had a chance to understand what's happening to him yet because it's the first repeat. It takes him all the way until they're in the diner and Dean makes the exact same order. Hey, Tuesday, pig in a poke. Before Sam really starts to understand that, no, this really did happen. You lived this whole thing. And he's starting to ask Dean, you really don't remember any of this? And Dean's like, what are you talking about? Of course not. They have a frustratingly hilarious argument about deja vu because Dean is not getting it. It's not deja vu. It's time loop. Sam can't bring himself to tell Dean that he watched him die before he woke up again and it was Tuesday again. He's just trying to avoid telling Dean that. Sam is acting very, very weird. Dean asks, you know, well, maybe this was like one of your psychic premonitions. And Sam's like, no, it's all like it really happened. and he convinces Dean to go check out the mystery spot now during daylight when it's nice and crowded, when the owner isn't going to surprise them and think they're intruders and shoot Dean and kill him again. Sam doesn't want to see that again. So instead, Dean storms off and is like, fine, we'll go now. He doesn't even make it halfway across the street before the guy from the diner speeds past and runs him over. Dean dies again in Sam's arms, and again, Sam wakes up to heat of the moment. The quality of the light in the shot is already starting to get more washed out, and he wakes up this time realizing what's happening and horrified by what's happening. But Dean, he's still singing and bopping right along to the song. But at least this time, Sam has got it figured out. He figures he's stuck in a time loop. And Dean's like, ah, like Groundhog Day. Yes, exactly like Groundhog Day. Sam just forces Dean to take him seriously. Dean's trying to convince Sam to just chill out. And Sam's like, I can't. I can't calm down because, and for the very first time on day 3 of the cycle, he admits it out loud. He can't do it again because Dean dies today. He's already watched him die twice and he can't do it again. Oh, Sam, poor baby. The montage we see as they leave the restaurant gets quicker. Just the dog bark, the woman bumping him, the what do you want, a Pulitzer from the desk guys. And Sam is absolutely convinced that the mystery spot must have something to do with it because it's the only connection he has been able to find to any mysterious supernatural activity in this town. And he convinces Dean that they need to investigate it. Dean's like, okay, well, we'll go back after dark. And Sam's like, no, no. And he can't even say it again. He's only said it once, but he can't repeat it even. That, yep, Dean guesses he died there. That sobers Dean up a little bit. And then Sam has to pull him back from getting run over by the car like he did the previous day. At least they finally make it to the mystery spot in full daylight and talk to the owner, who tries to finagle them as Sam gets angrier and angrier at him. He pulls his practiced lines of, it's a mystery spot. It's where the laws of physics have no meaning. Sam asks him to explain why or what he means by that. Eventually, the guy gets frustrated trying to, you know, keep up the charade of it, that it hasn't been in his family for generations. It's just he bought it at an auction a couple years back and he's just trying to make a living. After they leave the mystery spot, Dean's like, well, yeah, place was just as stupid as I expected. If we can't figure out what's causing this, maybe if I just survive the night, because Sam's day resets every time Dean dies, let's just go back to the motel, hang out until midnight, and hopefully it'll be Wednesday and the loop will stop. If he doesn't die, he's like, okay, who wants Chinese? And starts walking back. Sam seems marginally relieved by this suggestion. Like, hey, okay, yeah, why didn't I think of that? And then as soon as Dean steps away from Sam, the two mover dudes in their desk that wouldn't fit through the door, they'd been trying to hoist it up with a rope, and the rope breaks. The desk falls, and it crushes Dean to death. And Sam is just like, oh, crap. Just when he had a tiny bit of hope, it got snatched back away from him. And then heat of the moment plays, and it's just a little bit dimmer and grainier than it was before. Rather than try and explain the whole problem of the mystery spot anymore, Sam's pretty convinced that it has nothing to do with it, he takes Dean's idea from the previous day of just getting Dean to survive until midnight and presents that to Dean as like, you know, I've watched you die several times now, and this is the only thing I can think of that might stop the loop. Dean seems to think it's going to be easy to just survive the day. And Sam's like, yeah, it's not. So already Dean's trying to do something useful. He's like, you said I ordered the same thing every day. Well, how about if I change up my order? And so instead of a side of bacon, he orders a side of sausage. And once again, it's Dean who provides Sam with a sliver of a fragment of hope. And he's like, see, different day already. It's not going to be hard. If you already know everything that's going to happen today, we'll just do something else, which honestly is what Sam's been trying to do since the start. But Dean doesn't know that, and he's still upbeat because none of this has weighed on him the way it's crushed Sam. Dean's like, if I say I'm not going to die, I'm not going to die. He picks up one of his sausages, takes a bite, and immediately chokes on it and dies. And Sam goes from happy that Dean's upbeat attitude and descends immediately back into resignation of, how can my life be this stupid? But then he gets up again because it's Tuesday again. And the montage changes. We don't see Dean bopping along to the song, but we know what's happening. We see Dean in the shower all soapy, upset because Sam said they can't go out for breakfast. Sam has given up on even trying to leave the motel room. Sam's like, you'll thank me when it's Wednesday. And Dean's really confused. And then you hear from the other room, Dean randomly dying in the shower. And Sam wakes up again. And it's Tuesday again. They at least make it to lunch this time. These tacos taste funny to you. And you don't even see Dean die from the tacos. He just... Sam just wakes up again. Then you don't see anything else other than Sam waking up, Dean electrocuting himself, plugging in his electric razor. And you've got to imagine that there's a million other, or at least, 94 or so other hilarious deaths that we don't get to see, unfortunately. But poor Sam. So we can see that when the next heat of the moment plays and we're back at the mystery spot and Sam is just losing his mind on the place. They have the owner tied up and Sam is just ripping it down to studs. He's determined to find out what the hell is wrong with this place because clearly there is something wrong with it. Nothing he's been able to do has been able to save Dean from this fate and himself from the fate of having to relive this whole day over and over again. Dean is legitimately concerned for Sam and he's like, Sammy, give me that axe. Sam fights him for the axe and insists on continuing to bash the place up. And then Sam is the one who accidentally kills Dean with the axe, which we only see via blood splatter and a scream from the owner of the mystery spot who's been taped to a chair, and you can hear him scream through the tape covering his mouth. It's horrifying. And the music playing over it is just comical sounding while this horror is happening. But we know Sam has resigned himself to just reliving this day again and again when the next morning he and Dean go back to the diner. And everything is still happening the way it did that first day. Mr. Pickett getting his change, Kel at the counter with barely enough change for a cup of coffee, Doris the waitress coming over to take their order. But this is about the first time we really get a good focused look at the man sitting further down the counter, drinking coffee and eating a stack of pancakes with maple syrup. I think it's funny also that on the wall above the bench where Dean is sitting, there's a sign that says, no smoking. And it's like, yeah, they're trying to save him from hell so he won't be demon smoke. Ha ha. Sam's even stopped attempting to explain the time loop to Dean. He's just doing everything in his power to do the right thing. He pickpocketed the old man's keys, the one who ran Dean over. Apparently, he's committed several other vehicular atrocities that Sam has witnessed and is just fed up with. But Sam is just not engaging anymore. He's just gone flat. Dean, meanwhile, is still trying to be his usual perky self. When Sam's turn to order, he tells Doris, I'd like you to log some more hours at the archery range. You're a terrible shot. And she's like, how do you know that? He's like, lucky guess. So he's just fed up with everyone and everything. So we know how Dean probably died at least once during that montage. And it feels like he's even sick of explaining it all to Dean. He tells Dean that this is his 100th Tuesday, and he's watched Dean die in inconceivable numbers of ways. He knows there's no way he can stop it at this point. He points out various people around the restaurant, that he knows their lives because he's had a chance to watch them, because he's seen them every day for 100 days. Sam is at his peak frustration. He's just saying everything that's going to happen right before it happens. Dog, where's my dang keys? Excuse me. Dean turns to him and is like, wait, all the times we've walked down the street, did I ever do this? And he runs and catches up with the woman who bumped into him and asks what she's holding. And it That's when he learns that she is the daughter of the missing man. Sam runs off to talk to her about her father, while Dean tries to occupy his time waiting for Sam by petting the dog tied to the bike rack. Then heat of the moment plays, and Sam wakes up again. Apparently the dog was evil, mean golden retriever, attacked and killed Dean Winchester. That's how you know there's something really fishy going on here. Apparently, though, Sam learned some things from Dexter Hasselbeck's daughter about her father and what he was doing there at the mystery spot. That he's not just a professor, he's a warrior for the truth who debunks places like the mystery spot and publishes exposés on them. And apparently that's what he was trying to do. I don't know why this is exciting to Sam other than the fact that it's the first actual lead on anything that he's had since this whole thing started. But it's something different. Rather than explain to Dean about the time loop, Sam actually is excited. Dean asks him, like, when do you have time to do all this research about this guy? And Sam just is like, ah, come on, we're gonna go check this out. But as Dean stands up, he says to Sam, it's kind of funny, this guy spends his whole life trying to debunk mystery spots, and then he goes missing in one. It's kind of poetic, like, just desserts. And then Sam's like, yeah. But I think it's interesting that the room divider behind where Dean was when he said that is the cross room divider. There's rectangles embedded in, it looks like ironwork or something. But if you look at the space between the rectangles, it's crosses, which, not a symbol for an angel, but a symbol of religion that angels are associated with. So I just like that. And obviously they didn't intend on angels at this point or intend on it being Gabriel instead of just the trickster. But wow, that's pretty cool now. Just as Sam agrees with Dean and says, oh, that is just desserts, he sees the pancakes left behind by the guest who'd been eating every single day at the counter. Pancakes and maple syrup, pancakes and maple syrup. Except today he had strawberry syrup. And Sam explains to Dean, 100 Tuesdays, the guy has maple syrup, and then all of a sudden he has strawberry. Dean's like, what, guy can't be free to choose what he wants? And Sam's like, not in this diner, not on this Tuesday. Nothing ever changes in this diner, except for me. And then Sam wakes up again. Nobody died. Nobody had to suffer through the rest of the day, and nope. He just automatically reset because Sam solved the first mystery. Sam now looks determined when he wakes up. Dean's still bopping along. Rise and shine, Sammy. At the diner, the man is back to eating his maple syrup as if nothing was wrong. And Sam is just watching him, waiting to make his move. And you'd think that if it was really the end of the problem for Sam, that the lighting and coloration would have gone back to that original saturation level of normal. But nope, it's still deeply washed out, subconsciously letting us know that no, this is definitely not the end of the problem. Poor Dean is just super confused. He's like, so you think you're caught in some kind of what again? Sam's just like, eat your breakfast. And then as soon as the man gets up from the counter, Sam picks up a paper bag and follows him. Dean's just resigned himself to not getting to eat his breakfast, throws some money on the table, and follows Sam. They corner him out in an alley behind a gas station, and Sam pulls what he had in the bag out. It's the steak that can kill the trickster. Dean is skeptical, and Sam is acting a little aggressively towards this poor man who's begging and pleading for his life, but Sam is absolutely convinced that he must be the trickster, or a trickster. Hilariously, this guy's name is Ed Coleman, and he begs for his life using the line, my wife's name is Amelia, I sell ad space. And who does that sound like? Whose wife's name is Amelia? Who sells ad space? That would be Jimmy Novak. So I think it's interesting that they cribbed those little details from his story, who was the trickster, for Jimmy Novak's story. Carver probably liked the name Amelia, and it just stuck around a lot because there's a lot of Amelias in here. Sam's mysterious girlfriend from season 8 was named Amelia too. So the woman he loves was named Amelia. And so as Sam gets to the culmination of his accusations, he's like, yeah, and I've killed one of your kind before. And then it morphs back into Gabriel, or Richard Spade Jr. And he's like, sure about that, bucko? This is where Sam finally begins to get the bigger picture, or that there is a bigger picture. He's like, so this is fun for you, killing Dean every day? And Gabriel's, I'm going to keep calling him Gabriel, because calling somebody the trickster when we all know he's Gabriel is just stupid sounding to me. So apologies. His name is Gabriel. Sam is like, this is fun for you, just killing Dean over and over again. And Gabriel's like, yeah, it is. He's like, but this is not about Dean. This is about you, Sam, watching your brother die over and over again forever. And honestly, he probably could have kept it up forever if he had gotten totally bored with it. And that had been the point of any of it, but it's not. There's a bigger picture. I'm surprised Sam didn't put that piece together sooner, that it wasn't about killing Dean, because Dean didn't remember. It wasn't traumatizing to Dean. It was traumatizing to Sam to have to watch this over and over again while Dean remained constantly ebullient in the background. Until the moment he died every day, and then it all started over again. But Gabriel's like, when are you going to realize that you can't save your brother, no matter what? Sam's like, okay, well then how about I just kill you now, and it ends right now. And Gabriel's like, oh, no, wait. Because Sam's not looking at the bigger picture. He might be able to save Dean from this, but he can't save Dean's life, because his deal is still going to be due in less than a few months now. Gabriel's like, okay, fine, you're out of it. You'll wake up tomorrow and it'll be Wednesday. And Sam's like, you're lying. And he's like, well, if I am, you know where to find me. Having pancakes at the diner. Sam's like, no, it'd be easier just to kill you. And Gabriel's like, no, can't have that. Snaps his fingers. And Sam wakes up. And it's Wednesday. Or is it? But Asia's not playing anymore. It's Huey Lewis. Dean is like, annoyed that there's no Asia. And Sam is like, are you kidding? This is the most beautiful song I've ever heard. Dean's like, how many Tuesdays did you have? Sam is just so excited. He feels like finally we're free. He doesn't even have a case to solve anymore. He knows that it was the trickster who sent their victim into a wormhole. So like, there's nothing they can even do to stop that from happening. It's the trickster. He's like, we're just getting the hell out of here. There's no mystery to solve anymore. Just pack your stuff. We're leaving. So Dean goes down and he's like organizing his guns and shit in the trunk in the motel parking lot in broad friggin' daylight. And like, Dean, geez, really? Dean thinks Sam has come up behind him, but it's not Sam. He's like, do you think we should have just let the trickster go? And he turns around and sees that it's Kel from the diner. And instead of robbing the garage like he did the previous day, now on Wednesday, something different's gonna happen. He holds him at gunpoint and is like, give me your wallet. Upstairs, we see Sam packing, and then we hear a gunshot, and Sam freaks out. He's like, Dean? And he goes running downstairs and finds Dean lying in the parking lot. Kel's running away. I don't even think Sam saw that. He just figured the trickster was gone out of their lives and they just needed to get out of town. Well, nope. Here's the big trick, Sam. Wednesday. Wednesday's the actual trick. He's like, come on, not today. This isn't supposed to happen today. And he's holding Dean and he just closes his eyes like, maybe if I close my eyes, I'll wake up and get to do this one again. Nope, that's the real trick. You've got to live with Dean's death. And what he does with it is kind of scary. The last thing he says as they sort of pan out and show the shot and the music finally turning grim is Sam saying, I'm supposed to wake up. It's supposed to reset. And it doesn't. And that was the whole point of watching all those deaths and him getting so frustrated and being willing to do almost anything to make that same day stop, that he'd forgotten about the reality waiting for Dean, whether or not today or tomorrow, but within the next 2 months, Dean's going to die and he's not going to come back. And there is no waking up from it or resetting it or getting a do-over. That's just something that Sam had not been able to come to face. He couldn't save Dean from that. And now he has to face it. He's getting like a preview of what life will be like after Dean's really gone. Except to him, it feels real. The whole thing feels real. 6 months later, and we get a montage of Sam driving and Bobby leaving increasingly worried messages for Sam, and Sam doing things in like robo-Sam fashion, stitching up his wounds, continuing to hunt. In that time, though, Sam has basically turned into robo-hunter. He's completely transformed the trunk of the Impala, and now it looks more like the way John's truck did, with the foam inserts for all of his weapons, and he's just mechanically going about hunting things down, because what else is he supposed to do after Dean's dead? He's stitching up wounds on himself and just sitting in his room and mechanically going through the motions of eating. And Bobby's final voicemail message to him is, "Sam, I'm worried about you. Just tell me you're not alone somewhere obsessing over this damn trickster." Because it turns out that the only thing Sam has been hunting while running across all these other things and just killing his way across the country has been hunting for the trickster. And then we see a montage of him going through the motions of everything we saw in the earlier montage. Him sitting up in bed, making his bed, brushing his teeth. You know, everything we saw in the original heat of the moment montage, but there's no heat left. Everything is just ice cold to him now. At the end of all of that, he gets one more message from Bobby saying, "Sam, I found it." Bobby tells him to meet back up at the mystery spot. Sam arrives, and Bobby is setting up a ritual, a special summoning ritual that can only be performed like once every 50 years, and it requires so much blood that it would practically kill a person in order to perform this ritual. Sam is pretty much like, "So we've got to bleed someone dry for this." And he's like, "Okay, well, then let's go get some blood." And he was going to walk out and just kill somebody without even hesitating. And then we get to see just how far off the deep end Sam has gone. He's refused to even see Bobby for the last 6 months. And when Bobby hesitates to go with Sam to kill somebody for this ritual, Sam's like, "Okay, well, if we're not going to kill somebody, then what are we even doing here?" And Bobby's like, "I just wanted to see if this would make you stop. Like, would this be enough to make you back down?" "No, it's not." Sam tells Bobby to just leave everything and he'll do what he has to do. And Bobby can just leave if he's not going to help. And Bobby's like, "I told you, Sam, I'm not going to let you kill an innocent man." And Sam just yells at him. He's like, "I don't care, you know, like, geez, Sam, please, please get a grip." Because this is one of those reasons, I mean, I know you've been traumatized here, but yikes, Sam. One of those, I have no way to identify with what Sam is doing here at all. Like, yeah. Bobby hands him a knife and he's like, "Fine, you want your brother back so bad?" And Sam's like, "What do you mean?" And Bobby's like, "Better me than a civilian." He's offered himself up to Sam to see if that is enough to shake him. At least Sam finally flinches. He's like, "I'm not going to kill you, Bobby." And Bobby's like, "You and Dean, you're the closest thing I have to family. I want to do this." And if Sam didn't doubt that this was actually Bobby, he would, I think, have stopped here. But he doesn't believe this is Bobby, thank goodness. This is actually the one thing that salvages any of my feelings towards Sam after watching that whole scene play out, is that he does, as soon as Bobby turns and kneels down, is like, "Fine, make it quick, Sam." And Sam's like, "Okay, Bobby," and pulls out the stake that kills the trickster and stabs Bobby through the back with it, because it's not really Bobby, but he gets that one moment of sheer torture where he believes, "Oh my God, I totally fucked up," because Bobby just falls over dead, apparently, and doesn't immediately resolve into the trickster until he evaporates, and it's proved that that wasn't really Bobby. That was just a trick. Only once Sam has begun to conceive of the fact that he may have killed Bobby does the trickster appear and summon the stake to his hand so that Sam can't stab him with it. But he's impressed with Sam. Not just that he figured it out and that he knew it wasn't Bobby, but impressed by just how ruthless and scary Sam could be. And this whole conversation, the whole lesson that Gabriel was trying to teach him here, feels like what they were originally foreshadowing in the original iteration of the finale. This obsession you have with saving each other, and all this sacrifice and blood and pain, and that Sam was on a path to sacrifice himself to save Dean from having to go to hell. And it was going to come at the cost of Sam's corruption of his own soul. They're basically just trading the soul corruption ball back and forth. And that was the point that Gabriel was trying to make, that there is no point to this, that that's your weakness, that all of your enemies know this is your weakness. Both of you is each other. So maybe you need to stop this cycle. And obviously we know that Dean eventually will go to hell and Sam will not save him at the end of the season. But this is sort of feels like a point where they were still leaving that open as an option, because obviously that carries into Sam's plot next season. Gabriel's like, you've got to learn how to live without your brother, because this is what it's going to be like when he's gone. And Sam just continues to beg, please, just please bring him back. You've got to learn to let people go. But apparently Gabriel has had enough and he's just like, fine, whatever, this stopped being fun months ago. And Sam's like, meaning what? And the trickster's like, meaning that's for me to know and you to find out. Because of course we know Gabriel already knows the whole big plan, the whole reason he's ever poked at the Winchesters to start with. And he snaps his fingers and Sam wakes up back in the same motel where it's Wednesday again. But this time he knows not to let Dean go out to the car by himself. They're back to that Wednesday and Dean's like, yeah, no Asia. The station sucks. It's like Sam had gone so long since that Wednesday that he didn't even remember that detail. He's like, oh, right. No Asia. Rather than getting excited or anything like he did the first time he woke up Wednesday, he just gets up out of bed and walks over and hugs Dean. Because he hasn't seen Dean in 6 months. And Dean is just a little taken aback by this. He's like, how many Tuesdays did you have? As they're leaving the motel room, Sam's mourning this whole 6 month period where he'd thought Dean was dead. And he knows he's only got a few more months left before he's going to be back in that circumstance again. And he looks back into the room as Dean's like, you sure you're okay? And Sam's like, no, I think I had a really weird dream. And Dean's like, clowns or midgets? Same joke he made at the beginning of the episode. But now Sam is just like not even acknowledging to Dean what he experienced. In addition to the 100 plus Tuesdays, he also experienced 6 months of what it's like to live without Dean and how much that hurt him and how off the rails he went. But he also now can get some perspective on that. So hopefully he won't go that far off the rails when Dean dies for real. And that's where this episode ends. And the next one, Juice and Bella, was almost the last one of the whole series. So I'm really, really glad they at least got the chance to finish out season 3, even if it was cut so short that half the plot line for poor Sam had to go out the window and get smashed into season 4. But at least they ended up continuing it, which is the main reason that I've been continuing to talk about it and talk about what was missing from the last 4 episodes of season 3, because that really does all happen in season 4, and we're going to be ready for it when it happens. There's some moments in this episode where I am like, holy shit, Sam is just a serial killer who knows how to put on a nice, normal human face. He was downright scary here. And it's chilling to me. I have a really hard time understanding Sam's point of view as a human being with emotions and feelings. Like, I can't reconcile that with what I saw in this episode. It's just scary to me. So, yeah, poor Dean doesn't have any idea about any of that and probably never will. But this episode, that experience breaks something in Sam that Dean won't have broken until season 15. Sam knows at this point, walking out that door, that he's not in control of his own story. That there are choices that he can make that might change his circumstances, but his story is still part of somebody else's bigger story. And it is what it is, and there's nothing he can do to change it. That has never been Dean's self-perception of his own reality until season 15. So I think that's why Sam is more resilient to that revelation at the end of season 14, because of what happened to him here. Because you don't live through this and not be fundamentally changed by it somehow. And thank God he didn't stay Travis Bickle. I mean, he's still got a seed of that inside of himself, and it will show itself again a few times in the future. But man, at least he's good at being a human being too. Despite Sam having some insights of his own, he struggles this whole episode to figure out what's actually happening. For over 100 days, by his count, he just becomes more and more frustrated by everything, almost as if this task was specifically designed to frustrate him. Yet he still charges on. Often in the loops we do see, not even telling Dean what he's up to or what his thoughts are. He's probably totally exasperated with wasting so much time every day, just bringing Dean up to speed yet again. But this is key, because with almost all of Sam's breakthroughs toward understanding, it was Dean who gave him the hint he needed to see the bigger picture. After struggling with Dean terming it deja vu, Dean was the one who finally said, oh, like Groundhog Day, giving him a key to explaining his experience on subsequent days. Dean had given him the hint to even talk to the woman who bumped into him literally every day Sam had experienced, and set him on the right path to understanding the bigger mystery about their missing guy. Sam wouldn't have figured that out on his own, because to him, the problem could only be solved inside his own big head, you know? He thought, I'm just going to muscle through this with intellect, and that just doesn't work. After Sam explained these findings to Dean, it was Dean who was like, oh, it's like Just Desserts, and the guy got exactly what he deserved. Which prompted Sam to notice the guy who on that singular day ordered strawberry syrup instead of maple and put all the pieces together and came up with Trickster. He couldn't have done any of that without Dean's input. After that first Wednesday, it takes him 6 months working in almost complete isolation to get a hold of the Trickster, and he didn't even do that without that input from Bobby, who wasn't actually Bobby because this whole thing took place inside that time loop. But it took that input, that nudge, that kick for him to break out and do something different. He would have just continued on and on and on. If Gabriel hadn't gotten bored, he'd probably still be there being Robo Sam, just hunting the Trickster. Which also bodes poorly for how well Sam processes and works through problems on his own. Which kind of explains most of season 4 for us, yes? He thinks he's right all the time, and he doesn't share what's going on with him, with Dean, and thinks he's just on the right path, and that no matter what Dean said, Dean would just talk him off of it. Well, there's a reason, Sam. There's a reason he was trying to talk you off that path. Anyway, until next week, you can find me on Tumblr and Twitter at MittensMorgul or at FPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord at mittens hashtag 4865. You can email me at mittensmorgul@gmail.com. And I'm always happy to talk to anybody about anything at any time. So how about that Doris, man? Little waitress has no idea that she even was responsible for killing Dean Winchester at least twice. You know, at least twice. And same thing with the guy who Sam starts stealing his keys. that clearly just stopping Dean from walking out in front of the car that one time was not enough. He probably also managed to kill Dean at least twice. So, like, these people, they have no idea what a small club they are in. People who've managed to actually kill Dean Winchester twice. They are, like, in an exclusive little club. Like, hardly anyone ever gets the chance to kill him once, let alone twice. And I love having conversations like this because you can only talk about people, characters in shows like this, about Supernatural, because they just keep coming back from the dead. You can get to kill them again. You'll have another chance. Don't worry, guys. So the club of people who've killed Dean once is small, but man, Doris, she's in a class of her own, honestly, and that should be respected. And I don't think it gets enough respect. So Doris, I respect you. Just maybe practice your archery a little more often. All right, everybody. Have a good one.